listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello there. Welcome. Welcome to Your Ultimate Life, this show that's designed 100% to help you live a life, create a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. And the key about that is to create the life of personal purpose, prosperity, and joy, and not abdicate, not give up your right to choose. I've got a special guest with me today, Marcus Newcomb, who I love the little subtitle he's got, When Stillness Speaks. And just before we were talking about the sovereignty that we have to choose nothing or to choose something, to choose vibrancy or flatlining in our life. Welcome to the show, Marcus.
Thank you so much for having me, Keelan. It's a great pleasure.
You are welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. So just before we were talking about, you know, this is all framed in the context of ultimate life, meaning purpose, prosperity, and joy, the key being our ability to create it. And you were observing that we can habituate ourselves to choosing numbness. And so we're going to introduce you as we go along. When Stillness Speaks is a great way to think of it. But I want you to just tell me what more about this idea of sovereignty, also to choose numbness or negativity or flatlining or whatever you want to describe it. Talk a little bit more about that.
You know, I'm still grappling with one concept, and that's the freedom of choice. Do we really have freedom of choice? If so, to what extent? And if you consider there is someone who life has knocked at that person's door very clearly, and that person decides to say no to life because the fear of what's coming when that person gives up its identity, what's next? And Keelan, this is not the first time that actually I observed that. I observed that with so many people who either want to become my clients or who have become my clients, they go through hell. So I believe it's very important for your viewers to understand that when life knocks and it offers life, it's not a given and it's not granted that you actually say yes to it. Or if loved ones say no to it and you see, gosh, these people are in addictions. These people are in dependencies. Like, how is it possible that this person chooses addiction and dependency over life? And that's exactly it. So what happens is when we're born, we are basically born into forgetting. We do not know who we are. And throughout that process, life throws so much shit at us that we become so accustomed to not living, to a numbness where people say, you know what? I'm so sorry, Marcus, but this is the only thing I know. This is the only guarantee I have. Everything else is so new to me. So what if I give this up? What's left for me? What's left of me? So this is a very serious issue.
I agree. I want to come right back to that, but we're going to take a small detour. I'm going to give you a minute to introduce yourself. Tell people what you do that brings you to these philosophical questions. You said clients, so talk a little bit about what that is, and then we're going to come right back to and answer those questions. What else is there? What is left of me? What's to become of me? But I don't want to do that right now. Just introduce yourself. Tell us what you do and how you create value and good and that kind of stuff. What are you about?
Sure. So what I'm about is I am the steward of stillness. And the most important thing about stillness is not absence of action. So that's why I'm saying that stillness speaks. So stillness is coherence between our thoughts and our hearts. And when that coherence becomes activated, that's when the access to our soul gets opened. And when the soul speaks, everybody understands and everybody knows It's not my intuition. It's not my instinct. Because if somebody asks me, how does it feel when my soul speaks? That's usually when they do not know how the soul speaks. Because the soul speaks, as you know very well, Caelan, so clearly. So what I'm doing is, I am someone who facilitates stillness councils for people, for two kind of people, for the ones who say, you know what, from the outside, I have it all. If somebody looks at my life, they believe I've reached the zenith of my life. But deep down, there is something that tells me there must be more to life. There must be more. So what happens is, you see, when we have the glass ceiling here, people always get up to here and then they shrink. And every time they go up, they shrink more and fewer and sooner and sooner. And suddenly they say, oh, you know what? I wish there would be more, but I think it is as good as it gets. So those are the ones. And for those, I simply help break through this glass ceiling, because up here is all they're looking for. So basically what it comes down to is pseudo imposter syndrome. People are stricken by imposter syndrome. And I say, sorry, imposter syndrome is not a problem unless you make it one. There's a much, much deeper issue, which we'll talk about later for sure. And the second one is people who literally have it all, done it all, achieved it all, and received it all. So they are human havings, human doings, human achievings. But guess what's happening? What's missing is human being. So those people say, isn't there more to my life? So those are the people who literally are at the zenith of life, where you say, gosh, what else could this person want more? There's one answer: to matter and to have purpose. So these two definitely summarize what I'm doing. So I'm a guide for those people and help them to get to their purpose.
Help them find the purpose, which is the ultimate sort of connection, soul purpose kind of thing. So thank you. And I wanted people to have that framing. So when we talk about this next question, they understand what you're working on and how you approach things. Mm-hmm. So when someone, life knocks at the door and they're afraid, they turn it away because the prospect, it's all thinking, right? Because they haven't done anything, but the prospect of losing what they're comfortable with, losing the identity that they've clung to, is so terrifying that they ask just what you said. Who would I be without this? Or what would happen if I leave it? What's the answer to that question? If I come to you that way, life knocks at the door, and I think about shrinking, and then maybe I talk to you or something else happens, and I decide to say yes, even in the face of a fear like that, that says, who will I be without it? Like, what happens then?
If the person says yes to the process.
Yeah.
It's probably for the first time that this person experienced true freedom. Because, you know, that is so interesting, Caelan, that people tell me, Marcus, the risk of saying yes is too big. And I said, you know what? If you don't try, what is the likelihood of failing? 100%.
Of course.
So as soon as somebody gives that yes, and people always ask me, Marcus, what does it take? I say, one yes. Show up once. Say to life, you know what? Show me. Speak to your soul. Speak to me. And once that one yes is given, there's usually no point of return, by the way. Because that yes comes then when the pressure has been so strong, when the pressure has been so high that people say, you know what? I can't do it one more day. And I can absolutely guarantee if somebody gives their soul life, that yes, life never disappoints. Never.
That's an amazing thing to think about. And, you know, I agree with you. Here's the one way I think about that. And that is, it is supreme and ultimate arrogance for me to think that I have any idea what maximum even means. And so when you say life never disappoints, it's like, well, duh. Like the universe, the energy space, grand unification, whatever it is, that's obviously far bigger than I could even comprehend. So how could it ever be that I am so arrogant that I would think that I know where the top of anything is? Yeah. So of course it doesn't disappoint.
Right.
What do you think?
No, I 100% agree. And you know what's really interesting to see is why that is. And I speak a lot with people from the Eastern world, as you know, like a podcast in India and podcast here in the US and in Europe. And what's interesting is universal, that even in India, where tradition, religion is a total different ballgame than, let's say, here in the US, even they started to believe if it's going to be, then it's up to me. So there is kind of a separation taking place from there is more and no, I have to rely entirely on myself. So imagine if you're so indoctrinated in if it's going to be, it's up to me, you will not even entertain the thought that there actually could be more. Because let's say if you're 10 years old, maybe yes. If you're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years old, it's so indoctrinated in you that you say, this is as good as it gets. And honestly, am I nuts to give this up? Even if it's hurting me, even if it's killing my soul, this is all I know. And yes, I'm hurting people around me. It's worth it. Because I am not risking myself. And that's what it comes down to. And people have to understand, it's not that they are malicious. It's not that they are mean. It's literally they are so caught up in where they're at right now that they literally can't otherwise. So it takes much more pressure from the world, much more pressure from the universe, which is usually not a pressure, but it's actually a sweet calling. The soul is calling. Mm-hmm. The point that this person either hears, and as you know from my own example, it can actually knock you down.
Right.
And then you listen. And if you're not, good luck to you.
So what do you think is the primary, I mean, we hear about things, you know, common language, midlife crisis, somebody gets to the middle of their life and they say, wow, I've climbed all these ladders and whatever, and is this it? And then they go do weird stuff, you know, go do crazy things, and we call it a midlife crisis. But I think it's some form of responding to that yearning that is there more? And I don't know what it looks like, so I'm going to go do something weird, you know, that you don't really expect to be it. Yeah, you know. So what is the in your experience working with people who have got to this yearning, what is the primary or top one or two or three things that maybe not out of frustration or desperation, maybe out of curiosity. I don't know. Talk about a couple of things that are the triggers for people to finally say, you know, I've done this and it's not happy, so I'm going to try something else. What are the triggers that cause people to do that?
I believe there's only one trigger.
Okay.
And it's the soul saying, Keelan, there is more. Because, you know, you ask the question, is this it?
Right.
And the soul answers very clearly, Keelan, there is more. So guess what? And now the really interesting thing is coming. Why do people have a pilgrimage to either Mecca or to India? Why do they go into a temple? Why do they travel the world to find an ashram? Why do they and go up the Mount Kilimanjaro, or probably if they're more crazy, go up the Mount Everest. You see where I'm going?
Yeah.
Every single thing that people are doing today is outside of themselves. So I believe today we have to talk about this beautiful story where the gods decided to hide the most precious thing in life. So one of the gods said, you know what? let's hide it on the highest point in the universe. And, you know, as we know, it's pretty much Mount Everest. And then the other one said, you know, Reinhold Messmer, he even went up there without, you know, oxygen.
Yeah.
So the other one said, you know, let's hide it in the lowest point of the earth, in the water. The other one said, you know, Jacques Cousteau and his son, they have these U-boats, which actually take them to the lowest point. So the other one said, you know what, let's hide it at the furthest point. The other one giggled and said, you know, humans, in the meantime, they travel to the furthest jungle, where there's not even life anymore, but they go there in order to get something. So as you can imagine, Keelan, the gods, they got quite devastated because they realized that wherever we hide the most precious thing, it will be found before it's time for that person to find it. So the chief god listened a little bit, and then he said, you know what, guys? There's only one place to hide it. Inside of that human being. And I guarantee you, unless that person is ready, that person will never go on the journey, on the pilgrimage, to find it. And that's where it's very securely buried in every single person. So now I can actually summarize what I'm doing. I'm guiding people on that journey to themselves, back home, where the original design awaits for them. Because the people get to the point where they say, this can't be it. And that's when the soul says, yeah, there is more.
So when you think about more, we've used that phrase several times, and I use it too, meaning what I have experienced so far, the things I've earned, done, learned, et cetera, have all served their place and maybe been fun or maybe been hard or whatever. And the more, you referred to it earlier in relation to purpose, life, the purpose of your being, the calling of to which you were, you know, ordained or given the gifts or inclination or talent or, you know, this is you, the best of it. So if you say a journey back to themselves, to me that says, I started there, I went away from there, and I got lost because of noise or social conditioning or all that kind of stuff. And at some point when I've got alignment between my heart and my mind, the soul speaks and says, there is more. And that sparks the journey to go back to the self, like, what am I really here for? Who am I at the core? Like, what is that truth? Because that, it sounds like, is the only place you find that most precious thing.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Okay. So how does that, I mean, obviously everybody's different. Like, everybody has a different DNA physically, a different set of life experiences that makes them completely unique. Talk about, because there's so much of comparison in the world. Someone's better than someone else because they have more status or more money or more this, more that. Yet the truth is every one of those, it sounds like from what you're saying, has a valid, powerful, true self and purpose. How do we get past this world that we've built where there's so much differentiation and judgment when the truth is everybody has this valuable purpose? Talk a little bit about that.
You see, I believe what's happening right now, Keelan, is almost like a spiritual awakening. Under normal circumstances, I would have had to be writing at least a couple of books. And I would have had to have a bestseller right now to be invited on as many podcasts as I am right now. And I haven't written one single book. But it's so interesting when I asked the universe, it said, Marcus, you're actually a walking, living book in the writing. That was interesting. So now I believe we are at the precipice in life where there is change coming. And I believe it all comes down to spreading the message to as many people as possible and being ready, because, you know, this is something we discussed in a personal conversation. I cannot make any acquisition for new clients. Like, every single person is prepared by the universe itself. Mm-hmm. Every person gets to that point where the soul says, you know what, Marcus, now it's time. Now you have to heed the call. And this is why I'm going on so many shows, because mm-hmm. it's probably the only way to reach certain people. Mm-hmm. You know, in earlier days, I would have had to travel the world and speak from person to person and then have bushfires of messaging.
Right.
But now, thanks to the modern technology, I can speak to hundreds of thousands of people in a year mm-hmm. when getting on enough shows or speaking on enough stages. Mm-hmm. So this is pretty much what it comes down to. I believe we are in a spiritual awakening. I hear from many, many of my friends and peers. And I believe we are at the point where so many people are asking this question. Is this as good as it gets? Because, you know, why were we born? We were born for a purpose.
Yes, we were.
But then we were greeted by a society. And guess what? The first people who we met were our parents. And I don't blame the parents at all. They just don't know better either. But they invited us into society, helped us to become amazing little soldiers who then went to school, university, and then into workforce to become an amazing member that sustains that system of the more outside. But the real journey is inside.
Well, every system wants to perpetuate itself, and so it's not strange that it does that, and it's effective camouflage to have it inside. So I love your characterization of you as a walking, living book. One of the things I told a bunch of people today on a 25-person seminar I was leading, mm-hmm. and I said, you know, the most powerful gift that each of you, and I was talking to them, you have to offer the world is the story of your becoming. The story of your own journey and the awakening of that yearning to find the gift that's inside of you. So if you are a walking book, and I believe you, and you are, and the course that's in you, the book, the language, the teaching, the truth that's in you is from your own experience, like, what is the name of the book? What is the topic of the book? You know, you've got Stillness Speaks, you've got the guide to the core, your core message, returning home to yourself. Do you have a name or a sort of name, a working title for the walking book that you are? Because I agree with you and I love it. For me, it's fun to have a way to remember that. So what would you say?
Give me a quick sec, because I wrote something like this down this afternoon and it's so fresh that I have to look it up.
Okay, that's fine. Please look it up, because
it really goes totally into things. And by the way, this is going to become my podcast name. It's Shifting Perspectives, Remembering What the World Taught You to Forget.
Ooh, Remembering What the World Taught You to Forget. Yeah. So unpack that a little, because no parent wakes up and says, I'm going to screw my kid over. I'm going to do bad to them. I mean, maybe a few do, but not most. They're trying. And they, too, were socialized and brought up in this thing. But shifting perspectives, remembering what the world taught you or this system taught you to forget. How do you, when a person is intrigued by that title, and I am, I can't wait till you start your podcast or the book. Is that going to be a podcast or a book?
Yeah, you'll be a guest.
No, I can't wait. So I'd love to be a guest on it, because I've been on that journey, too, and I am. And that's why I've got all these shows. What the world taught us to forget.
Mm-hmm. And it's especially to remember what the world taught us.
To remember. And then more than remember, to own it, to do something with it, to claim it, to be in it, and all the rest.
Yeah.
How long does it take a person who's been trained, taught to forget their sovereignty, their divinity, their spark, their purpose, to lay aside the layers of that conditioning and begin to own the truth of who they really are, their nature, what they came to do and be. How long does something like that take?
That's a loaded question. So let me answer.
Unload it.
let me answer this way. It can be from lifetimes, plural, to getting to the point where you say, you know what, Marcus, I just want it. I don't know what I'm saying yes to, but I'm saying yes to it. And it was so interesting. There's one, by the way, there's one recommendation on my LinkedIn profile, which says, when you start working with Marcus, it's a mixture of, what is it called? Two sci-fi, yeah, I'm not so much into sci-fi series, but one of them is Matrix, and the other one is where Leonardo DiCaprio was in Inception.
Inception, yeah, I remember that.
Yes, working with Marcus is like Inception and Matrix at the same time. So you can imagine what this means.
Yeah. I've seen them both.
Yes. So it can be almost instantaneous because the yes is such a catalyst, and it can take a little bit longer.
Sure.
But in general, when the yes, so put it this way, if the yes occurs, then the journey inside begins. And as you know, I don't preach stillness. I don't do stillness. I am stillness. So when someone actually starts working with me, every single time when they come on a call with me, they come under kind of a cloak almost, where the noise, the distractions, the troubles, the challenges, they all stay outside. And it's probably the first time in life where the soul can speak to them. And as you know, I don't do much talking in terms of these sessions. I am mostly quiet, which doesn't mean I am inactive. When stillness speaks, right?
Yeah.
So that is interesting. If somebody actually says, yes, I want to go on that journey, I can almost promise there is instantaneous change taking place. Because, you know, what's actually happened is we all have an inner paralysis, some more, some less. And what stillness does, Keelan, is it short circuits the inner paralysis. So it's almost like the inner paralysis comes on a call and it gets jolted by the stillness. The stillness is so powerful, and I can attest that by many, many calls. Stillness is so powerful that it literally jolts the inner paralysis and short circuits it. So suddenly the inner paralysis opens up, and then you hear people say things like, Marcus, now I understand. Now I see it in a way I've never seen it. Or another person says, you know what? I never even thought about sharing this with anyone. And that's the soul. So it can happen in an instant when people say yes. And it cannot take place within lifetimes when people say no.
You know, it's interesting because you talked about an alignment between the heart and mind is the conduit through which the soul can speak. And it occurs to me that when we allow that's why I love the word stillness so much. It occurs to me that when we allow the busyness of life or the pressures of expectations or the I'm supposed to this, that, and the other all churn up enough dust that there's no opportunity for clarity. There's no opportunity for that conduit to be open. And that's the first thing. And the second thing is what you said right to start with, people are scared to death about what might come out of that pipe.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's like somebody said, you know, it's not our weakness or our darkness that we're afraid of. It's our light and our power. And I'm paraphrasing it incorrectly, but it was the opposite of Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Marianne Williamson's credited at least with one version of that, which it is not that our, you know, our weakness or darkness or whatever scares it, but it's our strength and light and power. Why the hell are we so afraid of what might come out of that conduit, our soul, when our thoughts and heart are aligned and there is stillness? The dust settles, sound settles, the interference settles, and we open that. Why are we so afraid of that, do you think?
I think it has to do with a couple of things. As I mentioned before, I believe it has to do with socialization. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned parents before, and I gave it some thought when you spoke. I believe today's generation and the one after me and the one after me are at a point where, in my generation, I'm born in 72. My generation has a choice to think and to feel whether there is more. The generation after that has already an urge to think that. The generation after that is pushed into it. So you see what I mean? There's basically a spiritual awakening taking place where I sometimes say it when I speak to business owners. I say, look, in one or two generations, it's not the question whether you as the business owner will have to or can adjust to your workforce. The question is actually when, not if, when. Because the new generation is being raised is so much into freedom, but misguided freedom. They're becoming rebellious, and they need guides who actually help them to steer it in a natural way back home inside. And I believe this is something we'll be facing more and more.
What does that look like? So this second generation, so if you're 72, you're Gen X, which is 64 yes, to 82. Correct. And X, and after that's millennials, and then you have Gen Z. So yes. You're saying Gen Z born after 2000, which are just now adults, and I guess we have Alpha that are still little kids. But yeah. In that generation born after 2000 are being pushed. It's like, you're right, the spiritual transition. Slow, stodgy, faster, faster, faster. Yes. And they're being invited in more and more powerful, irresistible ways almost to, I'm going to repeat what I think you said, and I need you to correct me, to search for the freedom, to find the yearning early, to listen, to say yes, but without any models or guides, it's misinterpreting and sort of wasting the opportunity to center in on it quickly and being scattered all over the place, kind of like a pinball machine, you know, bouncing all over the place because there's no boundaries. And what I'm hearing you say is it's a call for, I'll just call them enlightened guides of some kind that can help them realize to more quickly latch on to and complete that journey to their true essence. Is that what you were saying?
A friend of mine, his name is Nigel, and he works with what he calls outliers. Mm-hmm. And that is a very given. Like if somebody is not properly guided, they become outliers. Mm-hmm. That's not healthy either. You know? So what I'm basically saying is that only our generation and the generation next and the generation next actually get to the point where they start asking the question, is this it, or is there more to my life? Mm-hmm. What is so interesting, if I look at the generation of my grandparents, and they died when I was very young, I was in 11 or 12 years old, so they were already in their late 70s, 80s. They, I don't believe, have ever asked, is this it, or is there more to my life? There must have been a different sense of purpose. But the younger the people get, the more they start asking, is this it, or is there more to life? Mm-hmm. It's almost like, you know, like when I look at my grandparents, my grandfather was taking care of his wife who was mentally ill. Mm-hmm. He didn't put her into an institution. He cared for her, had his huge garden, And he was basically on his feet probably from 5 till, I don't know, midnight. So he had no time to think thoughts like we have today.
Right.
Right? So sometimes I wonder, even when I speak with my own parents, the question, is this as good as it gets, or is there more to my life? I don't even think it occurred to them, because the programming, the numbing, was so prevalent that when I actually started asking these questions, I was almost considered a disturbance. Mm-hmm. Like, why can't you just be like everyone else? Right?
I'm laughing because I had the same experience. Keep going. Beautiful.
So why can't you just be like us? I said, because I'm not. And as you can imagine, if suddenly your own parents start considering you almost like an enemy of the system, that's not so much fun.
No, but you are.
Yes.
You know, because it's a disturber to say, I'm not going to do this system. I'm not going to jump in this hamster wheel. I'm not going to pursue what I've been socialized to do. I'm going to just embark on this soul journey. And people might call it 100 things. But, you know, what's the meaning of life? What am I really here to do? What matters? And yeah, all of the rest, you know, you climb the ladder and you find out it's on the wrong wall and all the rest of that stuff. Right. And so you are a disturber to the system. So you started asking that questions and they looked at you weird. And then what?
Then I just knew I'm on my own.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So I want you to, you know, you talked before when we recorded a podcast episode a little while ago, which is on my other show, which will come out in a few weeks. But one of the things you said then, or maybe you said it today, I want to explore. And that is this. You said getting on stages, you know, is an effective and powerful way to invite people to begin this journey, to begin to realize it's okay to ask the questions. You're invited to ask these questions, and there is a way to begin to find an answer. So if you invite people, what would you do to stimulate their thoughts, their thinking, to invite people who are listening to find you, not just where to do that, but what would you say to affirm, to validate that feeling so that they feel like, I need to do this. I need to ask that question and go there.
So there's pretty much an encoded message, and the encoded message will be received by anyone who is ready to hear it. Mm-hmm. And that's when I say, is it you who asks, is this as good as it gets? And my answer to you is, yes, there is more.
Okay. All right. So I want you to tell me in the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks, some period of time, what is the most, or, you know, one or two of the most interesting discussions, discoveries, opportunities you've had to talk to someone who was asking that question? Like, talk a little bit about a circumstance, a conversation where someone heard you ask that and said, is it you that asked? Yes, it is. Yes, there's more. And then something happened when you said, yes, there's more. Tell me a little bit about that.
Do you remember when I shared with you, Keelan, where I spent most of my time at the moment in the last couple of weeks? It's on podcasts.
You did say that, and you said that's what you were trying to do because you were intentionally feeling the urge and the yearning with this awakening to get your message of affirmation and invitation out there.
So guess who those people were who reacted to it?
Well, tell me.
Podcast hosts.
Oh, the podcast hosts.
After another.
Cool.
Like, it sometimes felt like it was just the two of us. Mm-hmm. Knowing that hundreds, maybe thousands of people are going to watch that episode.
Sure.
But it was just the two of us. Yeah. That's why I love going on podcasts, not just, you know, for people in general to hear the message, but there is no better way to have an intimate conversation about stillness than being a guest on a podcast.
I find that same thing. It's interesting. You know, one of the things I do is I love help people find and then use the story of their own becoming, write books and do stuff with that. And I found the same thing. People whose shows I'm on or who I'm on their show. And I think, I don't know, but I think the reason is because someone who's taken the effort to start a podcast, to start trying to do that kind of work, communication, they've already taken steps. They've already said, you know what, I'm going to do a thing. And the thing is the podcast. But they're doing a thing to make a difference, to add good to the world. And to me, that means they're already knocking, they're asking, they're looking, they're trying stuff out instead of sitting around wondering still if they ought to do something. I don't know. Do you find that?
Mm-hmm. I say partially, absolutely. And as you know, the same way as I don't acquire new clients, I am never hunting podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
So what's interesting, I became a member, you know, of the service, you know, as well, Podmatch.
Mm-hmm.
So he's an acquaintance of a friend of mine. And it's so interesting. I'm going through, let's say, 12 podcasts, and there's maybe one or two I feel inclined to write to.
Sure.
And probably out of 10, one or two reply, and maybe one out of those two invites me on a show.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe the same way as the universe prepares people to work with me,
mm-hmm.
the universe prepares the podcast to host me.
Okay, that makes sense.
Pretty much. Like I can tell already from the response, you know, I send out a brief where I share what I would offer to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And already their response, like, you know, that's what you said, return to original design. That's where I stopped reading. That's where it caught my eye. And it's very obvious. So this person has something already where it says, what I'm doing is fulfilling, but at the same time, the who I am is not. So you see, this is an interesting detour we actually can take right now, Keelan, because someone can do something purposeful, but being far away from who they actually could be. So the
question
doesn't have to be in congruence with the doing.
So but when it doesn't, there's a dissonance.
Oh, yes.
When that happens. Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is what sometimes happens, as I said, when I go on shows and people tell me, you know, Marcus, please introduce yourself. And as you know, I don't think much. It's not because I'm dumb. It's simply because I know when I let it flow, the right stuff comes out of my mouth, meaning mm-hmm. it's guided by my soul. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I finish with my intro, they immediately go into my intro, pick a piece, which I could not have chosen in terms of my intro, mm-hmm. and run with it, because it was exactly what was pointed and coded to them.
Well, that's the best way to do it, because then there's synergy and resonance between you know, the host, and presumptively the audience, those that are listening who come to look for stuff. So I want to make sure that you get whatever. I'm just going to ask you, in terms of the work you do, the steward of stillness, which you used the word the other day, steward, and I love that, and stillness speaks, and the congruence between the heart and the thoughts in the heart and the soul speaking through the conduit and all that stuff, original design. I love all those words. Is there another, any other piece of this that we haven't explored that you're sitting there thinking, we need to get to this piece? Some other piece that we haven't touched on yet?
I believe the most important part of the message is there is more. And as I mentioned before, I believe it's to remember what the world taught you to forget. So let's look at one specific aspect, which is talked about before briefly. Why is it that our society holds the mind in such high regard? Why is that?
Well, I don't know what you're going to say, but I think the mind is more easily controlled than the soul.
Exactly.
And so we say the mind is all. I mean, when Immanuel Kant wrote The Critique of Pure Reason, and from that time forward, it's been, we have idolized, we have put it on a pedestal, our own reasoning. And that's what I was thinking about earlier, the arrogance, the supreme arrogance of thinking that we know anything.
Yeah.
Is such stupidity. And so I think the mind is held up because it's easy to control, influence, push around, and the call of the soul is infinitely more powerful. So that's what I think.
So let's talk about something really interesting. I'm not naming the scientist, but it's a scientist who I admire. And he said something really dangerous. He said, whether you believe it or not, if science says it is true, it is true. And I thought, that's dangerous and foolish.
That's a pile of crap. How many times have we had scientific truth and five minutes or 5 months or 5 years later, we got to walk it back and start over? Yeah.
Right? That's the point. And, you know, I was on a podcast recently. It was about speaking about the book and then coming up with the lessons learned. And I spoke about Think and Grow Rich. And Think and Grow Rich has this very interesting premise coined by the late Bob Proctor, who is admired by probably millions of people. Mm-hmm. And he always said, the subconscious mind cannot be controlled. Like, it can be guarded, right? So the mind basically does what it does. And then the subconscious mind can only be kind of controlled by repetition. That's what he calls it, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he puts out a thing which you can read 1,000 times, and that will then kind of program your mind. I personally believe it's BS, and it's absolutely unnecessary. Because you see, a friend of mine actually gave me a beautiful image recently, and another woman gave an even more beautiful proof for what I'm going to say now.
Okay.
He actually said, Marcus, it's not only that we are having hamster wheels we're running in, it's we have become hamsters. So human beings are conditioned to abdicate from being a human being to taking on the idea and the concept of being hamsters, running in a hamster wheel. And now it gets to the point, Keelan, the more money you have, the more glamorous your freaking hamster wheels become.
Now that's an absolute fact.
I speak with people, they have gold and diamonds in their hamster wheels. They have little sofas built. They have little beddies, day beds they can stretch out for a little while. But guess what? They are running and running and running and running. So I met a person who admitted to me, he said, Marcus, I have 13 freaking hamster wheels next to each other, and I'm running back and forth. Those are my my projects. Those are my clients. And you ask me, what does it take to get out of it? It's actually having the courage to take your little hamster foot, put it on soil, which is, you know, concrete, put it on the soil, and then immediately you become a human being. And that is what freaks the people out, Caleb.
I love that. So I'm going to...
Hamster little mind.
Yes.
Putting the foot on solid ground and suddenly becoming a human being. But guess what? It's the responsibility. It's the ability to respond that freaks people out.
Because they don't want to be responsible for their own life.
No. That's it.
They don't. So we've just got about a minute left. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure. I love that story, and it would be fun to completely do, but we actually talked a lot more about that on the podcast.
Yes.
So if you want to hear more about that, go here, find his podcast episode, which will be out in a few weeks. On Your Ultimate Life. I want to give you a chance to tell people where to follow you, where to find you, where to get more Marcus, to get more opportunity to tell you what resonated and ask more questions. How should they do that?
So right now, the absolute easiest thing is go on my LinkedIn profile, which is my first name, last name, Marcus Newcomb, as it's on the screen. Shoot me a connection request. Send me a message saying that you saw me on Keelan's Your Ultimate Life. And we book a call and get to talk. Or even feel free after I accepted your request to write me a long message if you feel inclined.
All right. Well, Marcus, I want to thank you. I really enjoy the call that you have for people to return to the original design, to connect with their true selves, to be the light for others when you had some success in that area, and to certainly live not as a hamster, but as a human being. Put your foot on the ground and explore what happens when you suddenly go back to your original design. Thanks for being with me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Keelan.
You betcha. I want to offer you the opportunity to check him out. Marcus Newcomb, MarkusNeukom, Marcus Newcomb on LinkedIn. Enter into a conversation. Sometimes what we talk about here might feel a little woo-woo, but the truth is you felt those yearnings. You felt that feeling. You know what it's like to ask yourself, dang, is there more? And answering, having the courage to answer that call is a big key to moving forward to create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.